Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Bulls Beat Podcast Show, the Chicago Bulls Podcast.
Welcome back to the Bulls Beat Bulls fans. Doug Tonis here with you discussing our Chicago Bulls. And I think the last bombs of this offseason have taken place for Chicago. Probably won't be a whole lot to talk about for the next couple months until training camp starts. Maybe get one more summer league game of Wendell Carter Jr. to watch, maybe two, depending on how things go there. But the big news is the Bulls will sign Jabari Parker to a two-year deal, second-year team option, which still gives him some flexibility for next offseason, kind of a tryout for Parker. And the Bulls, with this move, in my opinion, are looking like they're going to try and make a splash in the Eastern Conference this year with LeBron gone. I think there is a much bigger chance of that happening. So if we roll back a little bit, the news over the last week since the last show was David Nwaba had his qualifying offer rescinded on Thursday. The deadline for that was Friday. And the deadline basically means if you don't rescind the deal by this day, both the player and the team have to agree to rescind the offer. Now, I think David Nwaba might have agreed to have that qualifying offer rescinded anyway if they didn't do it by that date, just because the odds of him getting a deal over $1.7 million, his qualifying offer was really low, guaranteed are pretty much a lock in my opinion. I think it's going to work out just fine for David Nwaba. It is a little sad to see him go. I have been saying on the podcast for a while now that I hope they don't sign him to a long-term deal. I just don't think you commit to role players on long-term contracts when you're in a rebuilding situation. You can commit to a role player when you've got your star talent around you and you know you're going to compete for a long period of time. Even then, I think it's always dangerous to give role players more than 2 to 3 year deals. But in those scenarios where you're not under the cap, then I think it makes sense to commit to role players. Like you're just using your mid-level exception. You're going to get another one next year anyway. I think at those times, it's fine to sign guys to 2 and 3 year deals for these role players. But when you're under the cap, pretty much every free agent you sign almost always has a deal, almost always, that is not worth its value the next year. You can almost never trade out of a deal. By just making a deal, you're basically saying, I want to pay more money than anyone else is willing to pay at this point in time for this player. And so if you're the high bidder, then it makes sense that after a year, you're probably still going to be the high bidder because you probably overpaid to get the guy. Now, some guys make big improvements. We'll say Jimmy Butler is an example, who then become worth whatever deal they sign, and it's great. Now, Butler was worth his deal before he signed it, but if you imagined the Bulls having signed him to that earlier deal that didn't work out, and then they gave him the max deal the next year, if he had signed that earlier deal, he would have been a guy who then became more valuable than that. But it's unlikely that that happens. It's fairly rare that that happens. The vast majority of times, guys are not worth the deals they sign, and maybe the exceptions are the guys who are legit max free agents. I don't think we have any question marks about some of the superstars who signed these deals when they signed them. Anthony Davis is an example. No one's going to question whether he was worth the deal he signed when he signed it. And if, Karl Anthony Towns signs a max deal, I think everyone will agree he's going to be worth that max deal. So those types of things, make sense. But when the guys are in the middle or the guys are less, almost always a bad sign. So that was maybe a long way to say I'm fine with David Nwaba leaving, even though I'm going to miss him. And he was a great, great guy to have around. Really fun player to watch. Always brought the energy. Good luck to him. No more five Nwabas. And we can all shed a little bit of a tear for that. So what that room does, along with waiving Sean Kilpatrick, it opens up enough cap room that the Bulls can make a two-year, $40 million offer to Jabari Parker. Second year is a team option. So the Bulls will keep their flexibility going into next offseason. If Parker doesn't turn it around or things don't work or the fit is bad, the Bulls just don't pick up that team option and no harm, no foul. This is a move, I think, and really a series of moves, and you'll see this in a lot of the articles. I've not read them yet, but I'm sure it's there in Casey Johnson's article and some of the others, where you see how agents have this different power and how people use agents to do favors and things like that. There's like so many examples of that in this. So first, the Bulls curry favor with Mark Bartlestein by signing Kilpatrick anyway, giving him a chance to, show off his game and maybe earn a deal this offseason. So that's also kind of like a favor to him right away. And that sort of paid off in the Bulls getting first medical access to Michael Porter Jr., who they didn't end up drafting, but worked out in that sense of like they at least got to look and had some more time to kind of figure out what they wanted to do there. And they're doing like some favors and they have this close relationship with this guy. Now, he represents Parker. And so you see now with this going on, the Bucks agree to rescind the qualifying offer to Parker, which they didn't have to do. But by doing this and Parker agreeing to it, because they're after the deadline, so both sides had to agree, but Parker obviously wants to agree because he's trying to get out. By doing this, they allow the Bulls to have this team option on the second year that they wouldn't have been able to have on the contract otherwise. And so by doing that, it basically facilitates Parker to get this deal. Now, the Bulls probably would have made a deal with Parker anyway if it weren't for this, but the Bucks aren't going to match this deal no matter what happens because it puts them in the luxury tax and they don't really have a fit or need or whatever to have Parker and don't want to spend that much money to keep him and go into the luxury tax over keeping him. So they're going to let him go anyway. So the Bucks basically do Mark Bartelstein a favor by rescinding and agreeing to rescind this offer so that the Bulls can make the deal they want to make with Parker. And then the Bulls end up doing Bartelstein a favor in a way just by signing Parker, because Parker's worst-case scenario here is he ends up as a free agent next year, which he would have done anyway if he was on the qualifying offer, except now he makes $20 million instead of whatever his qualifying offer is. And it was probably pretty decently high since he was a high pick in the draft, but still, you know, it's much less money than the $20 million. And now that I'm thinking about it out loud without looking, I think there's some type of rule that says because of his injuries, his qualifying offer was a little bit less than it would have been otherwise. So either way, Parker gets a massive raise in this deal, which is great news for him. He gets to come to Chicago back where he's from, which I think he wants to do. And, you know, the Bulls get a chance to try him out. And this was a guy who had star potential a couple years ago and people viewed as a star. So you basically doubled down on Zach LaVine types twice. It's a curious fit on the roster. Parker is kind of a 3-4 tweener, mostly played power forward. We got a young power forward, and so we're going to try playing Parker at the 3. And, you know, for those who are a little cynical, it kind of brings back memories of the Bulls signing Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo and saying, well, who cares about shooting? It's high talent. We'll make it work. And this has a little bit of that feel to it. Parker's not a good defender. LaVine's not a good defender. The one thing I'll say about this is I think it doesn't seem like it's going to fit well defensively, but offensively, you could see how this could work out pretty decently, right? I mean, they still have to defend you. You've got now a bunch of big guys who can score. You know, when you start thinking about how another team is going to defend Carter Jr., Markkanen, and Parker, you know, three kind of guys who've got some pretty good size shooting and good all-around games, that might actually be a fairly intriguing big lineup. And sometimes I think when teams go this direction of all trying to follow the winner, everyone's trying to follow Golden State when doing what Golden State does, and so teams are going smaller and smaller and smaller. Sometimes if you go against the grain, you actually have more matchup advantages against the rest of the league. So while everyone else is going small, you go big, and all of a sudden big men aren't valued, and no one really has the players to deal with what you bring to the court, right? Because they've all gone smaller in chasing, you know, the Warriors. So it could be intriguing. You know, that's maybe a little bit of an optimistic view of it. We'll see how it actually works out. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why going small, and it's not really going small, it's going with shooting and playmaking that is the big thing. If you can get that with big guys, I think it's still kind of okay. Defensively, it's a heavy switch environment, though, because you need to switch to all these guys on the perimeter. So I think it'll be a dicey fit defensively. Offensively, I think it's awfully intriguing. And who knows? Maybe it works out. Now, for my money, I was a big fan of trying to just swap Felicio for Carmelo Anthony and then waive Carmelo Anthony. I think Oklahoma City would have absolutely taken that deal if it was on the table, if you didn't force them to throw in a draft pick and considered it a win. For them, they would have saved far more money than they would get by stretching Anthony on their own, and they wouldn't have to give up a future asset. And I think that would be all they would need. From the Bulls' perspective, it would clear Felicio off the books and get them to a point where they could very easily get two max free agents under contract next year. Now, if they want to do the max free agent plan, I know I've been pushing this. I know a lot of you out there are just like, no one will ever sign with the Bulls. It's not going to work. And I get it. Look, I get why you feel that way. I think that's a little bit of an overstated view. Fred and I discussed this a little bit on the Big Red Bus. So if you don't listen to that podcast and you like this one, you can check that one out. But in real short, if you look at it this way, over the Gar Pack's tenure, they signed Ben Wallace, who was the undisputed number one free agent in his year. I mean, he sucked, but he was still the best free agent in his year, so it allows the year to have money. And everyone thought that was a great move around the NBA at the time and thought the Bulls were going to be the sneaky title contender. And they kind of almost sort of were. You know, they made it to the second round and it looked like they might get out of it, but they didn't. So then they fell apart really quickly. And then later on in 2010, they signed Carlos Boozer for a discount. The Nets were going to pay him more money than us. And you might say, well, they lost on the big three, but those guys had prearranged to play together in Miami. They were never really viable options. And so, you know, Carlos Boozer or Amare Stoudemire was the second, you know, first and second free agents that were really available. And the Bulls got one of those guys. I don't know which guy you viewed is better going into that. I kind of felt they were pretty similar, both offensive guys who didn't bring a lot of defense. I was a slightly bigger fan of Boozer than Amare at the time, though, very slight, and thought both of them were probably going to be somewhat problematic. But the Bulls got a key big guy, big name, with a discount. I mean, actually took less money to come here. And then so you go, the next year they are bidding on Pau Gasol, who also takes less money to come here. Now, not a max guy, but he was a coveted guy who could have gone to several teams, and he came here for less money. And then they did get Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo, and, you know, I don't know that I count that as much of a win because Wade was, you know, a guy I clearly did not want at the time, thought was a terrible fit, and we paid a fortune to get him here. That was a terrible signing, but you still did bring in, you know, a couple big names. And so, if you just take that history and you compare it against the rest of the league of free agency, and you say, who are the big-name free agents that have gone other places in the past few years as free agents, not as trades, and you've got Boston who got Gordon Hayward, and, you know, maybe, I don't know. I don't think Gordon Hayward is a bigger signing than Carlos Boozer or Ben Wallace. Yeah, I don't think he's necessarily a better player than those guys are. I don't think it's a different tier. We'll see what happens with Hayward. He may end up being a good player, or he may end up being one of these things that they tragically hate because he got hurt and maybe he's never the same. I mean, we'll see. The type of injury he had is one players typically come back from. So I expect we'll see Hayward at his best, whatever that is. I'm going to note, though, that the Utah Jazz did not seem to miss Hayward at all. When he's gone. I mean, they just didn't. Their performance was basically the same without him. So I remain skeptical of him, similar to I was of a guy like Carlos Boozer. I think they're a similar tier. Obviously, Golden State got Kevin Durant, but Golden State was a team that had won the title, just a year previously, and looked like a team that would be a complete dynasty if he went there. And they only got him because of, you know, the weird gigantic cap spike due to the new TV deal. And if you went to the best situation, you got Miami, which signed LeBron, Bosch, and then kept Wade, who wasn't, you know, kind of free agent, but it was their own free agent. We're not going to count their own free agents because I think that's just sort of a different thing. So signing away someone else's free agent. And so, you know, those guys met and agreed they all wanted to play with each other, and Miami was the one place that it could happen. And so then you go to the Lakers, who just signed LeBron James, and Cleveland, who previously signed LeBron James. So those are the other teams who got like a superstar via free agency. And that's kind of it. So and you event, look at those situations. And so like the Lakers got LeBron because they're the Lakers. You know, I'll just give you that one. The Lakers got him for being the Lakers. You know, Cleveland kind of got LeBron back because LeBron maybe had unfinished business there. They had a great young cast for him to have a chance to win again. It was probably his best shot at winning another title of any team he could have gone to. So there were reasons why, you know, he went there for talent. Durant went for talent. And even in Miami, I think they all agreed to go for talent. And so when you look at where guys go, they go for talent. You know, in general, that's how, you know, places sign big-name guys. I don't know if anyone remembers how long all of you listening, if you're, I'm 42, I don't know if you're around my age or older, younger, whatever, but we'll just assume for a second, if you think back or if you didn't know this, Orlando used to be viewed as a super marquee free agent destination because it had great weather and everyone wants to go play in Miami and the state tax and all this other stuff. Well, who has Orlando gotten in the past 20 years? I mean, they lost Shaq as a free agent. You know, I mean, so it's one of these things where people view these cities as great destinations. The city just doesn't really matter that much. And if you want to view the city as a plus or a minus, Chicago is definitely a plus situation relative to most of the cities in the NBA. I'm going to say LA is probably better. I'm going to say New York might be better. I think that one to me is a little dicey, but we'll give it. Say maybe New York is better. Maybe you could argue that Miami or Orlando is more attractive because people want to be in Florida. But that might be kind of like about it. I mean, maybe some of the Texas ones are similar. But that's really, I mean, I don't even know if all of those teams really have a tactical advantage. I'd say LA might be the only team in the league that really can draw people because they are LA. That might be it. And so, but Chicago is a huge city, has a great, you know, urban life to it. It's got all kinds of restaurants, entertainment, you know, big city stuff, everything. You know, compared to most cities in the NBA, Chicago has got a lot to offer that NBA players like. So Chicago is a pretty decent destination. And so why do people come here or not come here is going to be based on what are their chances to win? Do you have enough money? You know, can I bring in other players and things like that? When you imagine the different situations people have gone to in these situations, it is largely situations where they had a great chance to win. And so the Bulls, if they do the cap space plan, would have a great chance to win. They would have, they need to prove it this year. They need to play well. I think they need to win at least 40 games. That's way above the Vegas average. I think the over-under in Vegas right now is 28.5. So I'm already maybe just sitting in pure optimistic space here. But if the Bulls could do that, and they had LaVine and Dunn and Lowry and Carter is their core and room for two max guys, that is the situation that has been attractive to other places and their teams, their players. That has made a place attractive to other players. That is that situation where you're like, wow, we could win here and we can bring in two max guys. That is the type of situation that has some pull to it. Now, going into this class, I think it's very dicey that they would get anyone. I view this as a low percentage plan. I just view it as a plan that if it works, it would be amazing and would have a lot of value. And there's not many plans like that. So that was a really long, long talk about free agency, which I think I've done already in the past. So I apologize for that, to discuss why I would have rather gone the cap room route and had this two max free agent thing and why I think there's still some chance that it could work. And if it does work, your upside is very high. If Jabari Parker works, I'm not sure what your upside is because you still have this non-ideal fit on the roster. You don't have him as a restricted free agent, so he'll be unrestricted. Is he going to work so good that he's a max player? I mean, are you going to sign him to a max extension? That seems like a really, really low probability to me that that would happen. I think it would almost be more interesting to me if both LaVine and Jabari were both on this 1+1 because then I could like jettison one of the guys and keep the other guy. And that would be actually a really intriguing amount of flexibility to have because I would think there's a good chance maybe one of them works. It's going to be really interesting to see if they could both work. And so we'll see how things go. I get why they're doing it. Jabari is very young. He's clearly talented. This was a guy people thought could be, you know, a legit, you know, every year type all-star coming into the NBA. So very talented. Tore his ACL twice. Still young enough that maybe he could recover and be good from that. I mean, I've always been very skeptical about guys coming back from ACL tears. And Derrick Rose maybe scared me for life because I used to think if you were like 23 or younger, it wasn't so bad. And Derrick Rose proved to me that it can be really bad even if you're younger. So we'll see. I mean, Jabari's game I don't think is one that necessarily is heavily reliant on and very shifty lateral movement like Derrick Rose was, but it still clearly can be an impact. Now, he did put up pretty decent numbers in the few games he played with Milwaukee last year, and we'll have more time to recover this year, and there's not a lot of long-term risk. My question really is there a lot of long-term benefit? You're going to hurt Lauri Markkanen's development. You're going to hurt the development of these other guys who aren't going to get shots because Jabari is a high shot, you know, per minute guy. He's going to take a lot of shots, use a lot of the ball. And I think for a guy who's probably only going to be here for 1 year, maybe things work out, but probably only here for a year, you're really going to hurt what you can do with the rest of your roster in terms of developing them by having him take all of those shots. Now, we'll see how things work out. That may not end up being accurate. It may be the case that he fits better into the team model. It also may be the case that he becomes a, you know, a great, great player and a star, and then it's worth, you know, taking these types of risks. So that's the really what it comes down to. The thing that's hard for me is I have a hard time seeing the upside. I have a hard time seeing the scenario where this really plays out well for Chicago. And the scenario that plays out really well for Chicago is effectively Jabari Parker becomes a max caliber player, and then they pay him max money after opting him for a year, and he stays with Chicago because they can offer him more than everyone else. And I just think that's a very low likelihood of happening. Without being restricted or having any other rights after this year and potentially the next year, I think it's very dicey that like you're going to keep him on like the reasonable deal because at some point Jabari is going to go where the money is. Now, maybe with the Bulls, he gives them a teeny bit of this hometown discount if things work really well, especially after they did him kind of this favor of getting him all this money over these couple years potentially. But I think those things are usually pretty low. I mean, in the end, you're always going to be looking for the best for you, as you should. And so I just have a hard time seeing how this works out in a way that's very exciting. That said, I do think the Bulls will be a more exciting team with Jabari Parker to watch this next year. I mean, you now have a tremendous collection of talent that's like 24, 25 and under. I mean, it's all young guys, all a lot of talent. There should be a lot of offense. There should be a lot of versatility. I think they've got playmaking at all the different positions now on the court. I think that's what's kind of interesting about this Bulls team. If you go with a lineup of Dunn, Levine, Parker, Markkanen, and Carter, I think you've got playmaking at every position on the court, and you have shooting at four of the five positions, maybe even five if Dunn improves his shot a little bit. I mean, I think that's going to be a really intriguing and fun offense to watch. Is it going to yield great results? I don't know. But I do think it can push them closer to 40 wins. And maybe it even helps them in the max free agent plan, because even though they'll have to not pick up Parker's option in order to pursue the plan, just the fact that they win so many more games will make the destination more appealing. So that's kind of about what I've got on this, you know, news and these thoughts. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of interesting Bulls news for quite some time now. This kind of, you know, ends things. They don't have any cap room now to absorb any space. They, you know, roster is kind of full. Maybe like one more minimum signing gets done. I think they probably need a backup point guard still. Maybe they just have Ryan Arcidiacono come and play as the backup guy, or maybe they sign someone else at the vet minimum. But I think that's probably about all you're going to see from the Bulls, you know, for the rest of this offseason. So that'll do it for this edition of the Bulls Beat. Probably be on the Big Red Bus sometime before too long, and I'm sure I'll be on one of the two within a week or so. Actually, now that I just said that, I'm traveling to India for work, so might be a couple weeks before you hear me again, but slow time. So talk to you guys soon.